I'd like to call to order the hot summer, July 17th, 2025, Facility Standards Manual Public Review Committee meeting. No members are participating remotely, and committee members disclose that they are members of one or more affected groups, and their respective declarations of interest are kept on file in the minutes of Facility Standards Manual Public Review Committee. We have, in some ways, a short agenda today, but lots to cover. Laura had a couple of administrative items to go over, perhaps changing a date for our August meeting. I'll let you.
So good news, no August meetings.
I'm sorry. September meeting.
Kevin's going to the August meeting.
Yeah.
So we are going to cancel both of the August meetings. And the reason I didn't send you the invitations is I have a conflict September 18th. So we're looking at rescheduling the September 18th meeting to September 11th and just want to get a sense if folks can do that. That gives us like back-to-back meetings on the 4th and the 11th. But we're just trying to, you know, see if that's a doable time. It works for Kevin and Pete so far.
Yes.
Okay, it's yes for them. Or is it whatever? It's
they can leave it on the calendar and see how September 4th goes.
That's fine with me.
I certainly can't do this without Laura, so.
That's we thought about it. So the other thing is worked with Kevin and Pete, and we're going to go ahead and schedule out through the rest of the year. You see there's two meetings in November and two in December. Doesn't mean we're going to have them, but we're going to schedule them. The other thing you'll see from this graphic is that I'm hoping we'll be back in the Dulles room at the second meeting in October. It's tentative. They're supposed to be done October 1st, have some staff training, and let us back in there. So if not, I'm still going to have this room as backup. But for now, I'm sending all these to you individually, mostly because I might have to change them. So be patient with me when you get six of these invites. That is the purpose of it. But thank you. That really helps me out to change that.
My goal is to try to provide committee some relief during the holiday season as well. So whether it's November and or December, I'd like to hopefully get those narrowed down to one meeting months. A lot of that has to do with how effective and efficient we are in kind of cranking through some of this MSN text for floodplain. Incentive to keep working efficiently. Yep. On the agenda, we were going to do a little flip-flop and bring the 10-year private reserve topic first ahead of floodplain. We have all of our floodplain folks here in deference to our sick participant online. I'm going to let him go first and then try to recover this evening.
But we still have to do minutes and animal court first.
Yeah. Got three pages of minutes from our June 12th meeting. But you did a pretty good job covering the content, Laura. So is there a motion to approve or any revisions or amendments? That's just.
I move we approve the minutes.
Second.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for that. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Prevention.
Okay, so you want me to proceed with the annual report?
Yeah, as quickly as possible.
Okay. So the annual report is scheduled to go to the July 28th Transportation and Land Use Committee meeting. As of this point, it's on the consent agenda. But one of the things we talked about was we needed to add that tech memo that we just issued on stormwater, where we rescinded one and replaced. So, and I found a couple other minutes just to run by you when I reread it. Instead of addressed land engineering topics, I changed this to establish land engineering and other division standards. I don't know if you guys feel strongly either way on that, but I felt like that was more like what we do. And then Here, I just abbreviated Board of Supervisors so I could chop this off. I think this should say, and the DOAM is town of Liberty scheduled, just because that's what we did, sort of above, we referred to it as, and the DOAM. Now, I know this seems strange, probably, that we know the outcome of the July 9th meeting. I sent you all an email. But we're holding to the fact that this timeline is a fiscal year report, and we're only reporting what happened through June 30th. So we're not going to report that that was, that DOAM was actually approved and effective August 1st. And then Betsy had suggested that we separate out the DOAM topics. Let me wheel back up for a second. I'll show you. What this was previously under was development ordinance amendments, DOAMs. But she felt like that section made more sense just to cover what was approved during the reporting period, what you worked on during the reporting period, and to really separate out the upcoming DOAM topics. This is hard to see, but I can show you it with no markup. So it would just be bulleted. And I only have the two items right now. Of course, we'll have more, but. And then the other changes on this are we added the tech memo. And we have three tech memos. And the other thing, Betsy thought this was a really good suggestion to say that first one was the fourth interim zoning restoration tech memo, so that we can kind of keep track. The first three and then the fourth one. So that is the extent of the changes, but I do need a motion because it's your report, and I want to make sure that Lord knows that you all approve this. Unless you have changes, and I'm happy to hear those as well.
I didn't realize we inserted fourth. To me, that's confusing. I hate to belabor the point, but we have three technical newsletters, and then we say the fourth. And is that critical? We provided input on an interim. I can live with it.
Okay.
This is super pedantic. Not that anybody's printing this off, but on the off chance they were, if there's any way it could be two pages instead of three, since it's literally just that one sentence on page three. Just something to see. You know, it takes more than 2 seconds to play around with. It's probably not worth it. But.
So I think actually these three bullets in that sentence are.
Yeah, I got a little more than that.
Oh, okay. On the.
I collapsed the margin. Same.
Okay. No.
We go to that font.
I make them really.
We can really find out if anybody's reading it.
I'm not getting font recommendations. I got to read them eventually.
Okay. We'll never come to agreement. go ahead.
I was going to say, I would move to, I guess, what is it? Approve the 2025 annual report as shown.
As amended. There a second?
Second.
Thank you, Drew. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
Okay. So I really don't have anything to display when we flipped off this agenda. If you want to do the 10-year private street.
Yes.
Second. Yeah. Okay, Seth's online with us, and he is going to sort of walk you through an update on that item. Seth, take it away.
Okay, thank you. So just an update on what's going on with this thing. If you all remember, we were going to work up a request to the zoning administrator for an advisory opinion, and what we are our ask there was that we move the trigger of this 10-year reserve fund to bond release, and then also get a request buy-in that the reserve studies, the reserve fund studies that are done as a matter of practice with the developers, that in fact was sufficient. So I got that all written up. We kind of in our final pitch there, and between the deputy director and our director, it was kind of determined that we really were stretching a little bit too far with what's in the ordinance. And so because of that, we pivoted, and we're probably back to looking at more of a seed money type approach. We fully acknowledge that that's not, you know, that's not what we we're initially shooting for, but to stretch, like I said, to stretch that far from what the text actually says, we felt we were, after seeing it in writing and really talking through it, it seemed like we were maybe going into a bad direction. The other thing with that is now we're kind of in a heightened sense of urgency because, you know, to not have something in place that's workable could potentially put projects in a like a zoning violation type position, right? So we want to avoid that. So we're doing some work to try to get things started. We did want to pitch this to the committee and bring it to your attention with the intent on really diving into it in September and getting this straightened up. What we're thinking initially is just have the bond estimate do some sort of, we'll set it up for maybe like an automatic calculation to where it pulls certain things from that bond estimate and then maybe takes a percentage of that. And we would apply that to the as the 10-year reserve number. If you're like me, you're kind of throwing your hands up saying, well, that's an arbitrary number. You know, we're thinking if we get together and we talk through it, that we can reach something that makes sense and is reasonable. And so that's the ask. And if, you know, if everyone's on board, my thought is I would maybe get working on that spreadsheet and sort of form up kind of what I'm thinking that could look like. And then we'll debate from there what items go in and what items don't. And then maybe what percentage we would use. That's really as far as we've gotten as far as the mechanics of it. You know, we definitely want the committee's help and input to come up with a solution that doesn't hold us up and allows you to move forward as you need to. Is there any questions? Does that, again, I acknowledge that's not really where we want to be either. Part of our new recommendation, to the zoning administrator is to bring this up again as part of their quick fix list, to revisit this section and hopefully make some adjustments there. So is there any questions right now for kind of what we're planning to do?
So for right now, the feedback that you got was whatever this fund consists of would still have to be established at the time of recordation?
Yeah, so we're thinking, at least I'm thinking, and you know, like I said, we haven't talked through all the mechanics of it, but maybe as part of the recording of covenants or such, there's a, you know, some kind of a statement from an account attached to an HOA, because that's when the HOA is formed, is my understanding, even though the developer has control of it. Where that this money can be shown is that, yep, it's there, and that should check the box, is my understanding.
My second question is, staff open to input from industry experts that could provide maybe some guidance as to what percentage of original construction costs practically relate to 10 years of maintenance?
Yes, that's what we desperately need. The answer is yes, Kevin.
I think it's important, right, to make sure. I think everybody that is going to have to deal with this be more comfortable if it was based on some standards or
yep.
professional input as opposed to, well, I think this should do it.
Yeah, right. No, I completely agree with that. And that's, like I said, that's what we desperately need is guidance and input from someone who knows on what comes up with a reasonable number.
I think Angela had a question.
I have a couple questions, comments. thanks, Deb, for that update. And thanks for asking zoning to look at that quick fix, too, because I think that would be very helpful. I'm curious on what, if the timing would change or the language itself, what they'd be fixing. But not sure you have that information today, but
yeah,
just related to the timing, get it, the HOA has to be, you know, established when we record documents, but it doesn't mean like the budget's been finished, reserve study's been completed. We haven't yet opened for sale yet, so we would be doing some things earlier than we typically do. And then on top of it, to ask the developer to fund it at that point in the process, we may not even have the roads built yet. So you're asking for, I don't know how much this money is going to be, but a lot of money very early on in the process.
Yep.
So if anything, I think it makes sense to, the bond release made a lot of sense. I don't think that was a big ask. I think that was pretty reasonable. And like when those funds would be needed is when the developer releases that responsibility to the HOA for the road. And then, you know, related to the amount, I would definitely like to be involved. I did look at the reserve study and the items, you know, in the 10 years, what they allocate for maintenance. You know, I can provide that information, but just as an example, like a 105 lot subdivision over 10 years, $220,000 of maintenance. So to ask, I mean, I don't know what percentage of that would be applicable for the developer to pay, but that's a big number for the developer to not only build the roads, but then fund that money, because 105 people will be living there for 10 years, paying into that with their dues and their capital contributions, which is how the reserve or how the budgets are typically set up. So just I would like to be involved in, yeah, that discussion if you guys are involved on that amount and percentage and what's appropriate there.
I had some conversations with staff, and we know there's a reserve study, which is probably typically a much more complex document than our construction bond or something. And staff, county staff is very familiar with bond estimate forms. And you know, you may have a firm that's putting together a maintenance and cost estimate for your overall subdivision for HOA purposes. You know, that includes pools and everything, but it's a multi-page document. To the extent we could work this back to the construction bond, I think it would simplify, maybe, but we're certainly like to hear industries, you know.
Yeah, it's like what items in the bond estimate would you include, right? I
mean, right, that's...
Yeah, that's like full construction.
Yeah, but if it's a fraction percent of that,
yeah,
maybe it works. And if Derek?
I was going to say two things, because Ed and I have been talking on this thing. He's kind of just reacting to what's there today. I think the first part is just how do we just satisfy what we have. The second part, I was wondering, is there any way, like as a group, we could send something to the zoning group that says, look, this is clearly wrong. Can you guys work on this in earnest? Because it's creating a lot of problems. It seems like it's really their problem because it's in the zoning ordinance, not so much for us to fix. I think that might be a good
thing to send.
It's like, no, I don't think anybody intended developers to post $200,000 escrows at
record. Totally fund maintenance for.
Yeah, I think instead of just reacting to it's there, yeah. Maybe we should send them something quickly and say, look, you need to look at this, it's a problem. And then in terms of like the sort of stopgap measure until we get to that fix, is what Zeb's sort of attacking. You know, maybe there's a sheet or. What I suggested too is if your project was part of an existing HOA, maybe it could be as simple as saying, hey, the Brambleton HOA has $1 million in the reserve study. They have enough money already that to support this extra section coming in. That might sort of satisfy those projects. And then some sensible calculation on the other one that would at least be like an escrow that we could recoup at the end of the project when the HOA is funded. Or whenever they get to the point where they funded their own reserve, the escrow could be released back to us and we could recoup that. Maybe there's a way to create something like that to get Zeb where he needs to get to in the interim.
That's great.
That might be something that could be in the HOA document that developer has front
loaded
this account that is expected to be replaced by HOA funds over certain date certain.
Yeah. I think the, in my mind, the most important thing is we should send something to the other group that says, look, you need to work on this. This is your problem.
Right.
It's in the zoning ordinance. Nobody intended this. I think the intent was to prove that there's going to be security for the road in the long term. There's other ways to do that than developers posting. Like Zip's proposal to move it to bond release was sensible.
Yeah.
Because then at that point, you could just show, hey, the HOA exists. Yeah. They have, they're healthy. They have money. And it seems like they should address that as quickly as possible.
I'm in favor of some communication to that effect, that I did a little bit of research. The zoning ordinance language kind of stems out of the revised comprehensive plan also.
Yeah.
So it's a unfortunate nexus there that one led to the other to, to now to the FSNM.
I think the intent is clearly that they have ongoing maintenance that's healthy. Not that somebody would write a giant check at the time of record flash. Like, I don't think anybody intended that.
Deb, did you have any other thoughts?
I don't. I mean, this is exactly the kind of conversation we need to have. And, I, you know, it's all good. I think we can, you know, maybe we have another request in at the end of this. If we do want to move the trigger, you know, we request that of the zoning administrator. We, I think, you know, we can explore all sorts of things that, that get us more in line than where I was originally headed. So I appreciate it. And, you know, I, to me, it's probably some kind of tech memo that gets us working for now until zoning either revisits this or does whatever they're going to do before we finalize anything in the FSM. But we can talk about that too. So yeah, I appreciate it. That's really all I had, Kevin.
So I want to jump in to clarify a couple of things from the discussion. I'm not sure, Seth, that this is part of quick fix. Did you see it in the quick fix list?
No, we requested that it be put on the quick fix list.
All right, I'll check that. I'll check into quick fix.
I doubt it. I doubt anything's happened just yet, but that was our request that they take another look at this.
Okay, I will see if it's made the quick fix list. If not, I guess what I'm wondering is if this committee tries to do that, write something up that I can pass on. Because while we're working, presumably zoning could be working.
Right.
Rather than wait till the end and say,
yeah,
it's their problem. We did this and we don't like it. Yeah, so I guess what I'm thinking is thinking a volunteer for the committee or two who could collaborate on what you want to say. I've written down a bunch of, I could draft something and send it to you.
I'm happy to work with whomever.
I started drafting what we would say for the
letter. A letter from the BRC, whatever formal you wanted.
That we're sending to the zoning administrator.
Or to the zoning administrator.
Or the zoning administrator. Okay. So my question, I don't know if we're time for me to ask a question, but it sounds like we initially maybe like communicated on this being added to the quick fix list, and it's not there, but like, okay, so we're going to try again. But like, my question is actually kind of slightly different. And that is like, not to micromanage, like how any of us are handling this, but like, I'm just curious about like how far up the chain the conversation of how much of a nightmare this is has gone, right? Like, is senior staff, is senior administration like aware that like this is in here and it's a huge problem in terms of like, you know, what is being communicated? Because I mean, like, I understand, like, it sounds like Zeb initially working with whoever he was working with, I think like up until whatever he was told, like, no, can't handle it that way, right? We were living in a world where maybe this wasn't going to be that big of a deal. And now that we've kind of learned, you know, that, okay, actually, we can't handle it the way that I think everybody would have agreed would have been the ideal way, it really, I think, escalates the zoning ordinance part of this problem. And I don't understand people wanting to answer the question, but just, you know, if you kind of, like, get what I'm saying in terms of, like, escalating.
I think it's what we're talking about doing this letter.
Okay.
From
okay.
The PRC. I think we're on the same page.
Okay.
Because I, you know, as staff, we can work through our directors, they can talk to the director of the other department. But I don't know, maybe feel strongly about it. I would recommend that the committee maybe write something.
I think so.
And with some ideas. I mean, there have been some ideas proposed here today.
Yeah.
That could help if you did help it.
I mean, I could take it like a stab at it, but then I'm going to have to send it at least to, I mean,
yeah.
I could send it to Derek and Angela, work something up, and then
sure.
get you and Pete to look at it, maybe. Like, do this in increments, maybe.
Yeah.
Try and figure it out. Yeah. We haven't done this
yet. I'd like to be involved in that as well. I mean, part of the concern is, like, hey, I'm trying to, what is the real problem, right? I'm trying to do, I don't even know if that's been identified.
Yeah.
It's so silly. Because the kind of the false hope, I think, here is, you're establishing a reserve fund, regardless of how it's funded, there's still no guarantee that that board's going to spend that money where that fund is supposed to be spent.
Yeah, I guess that's not, that's like,
so, and that happens often. So yeah. Is it more strengthening the language within the declaration that puts more of that responsibility onto the board or to the association versus in establishing an actual fund? I don't know, but. You know, what's the problem, I guess, I go back to.
Where we've been called into older communities where I told Laura were commercial properties, the biggest challenge is deferred maintenance, right? There was money being collected, but it wasn't spent, and now 10, 15 years down the road, you have this lightning bolt that you've got to deal with. That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a poorly run board, you know, poorly run association, it's going to exist regardless. So you got to be careful there.
I think
we always take free money. But.
I think outlining these concerns and the what ifs are important. I don't think it changes things immediately, but it gives some basis for whomever, whenever, to look back at the comp plan and the zoning ordinance and say, whatever the thought process was, that didn't account for these issues or these realities. And so that would be my suggestion to phrase that.
Yeah, I think the intent is just that there was a healthy HOA to maintain the roads over finished project as developers. And to your point, you can't fix stupid, like if they're poorly run HOA in the future, you can't create a standard that fixes that.
So you know, we have notes and everything on plans on any of the private facilities that clearly and required by the zoning ordinance to state these are privately maintained in the county and VDOT will not
yeah.
be responsible. I mean, it's who reads it, but it's there. I mean, we're just
going to do that exercise with roads, dam embankments, and
yeah,
the sorts of that was a common point.
I think we could, Angela and I can help too if we get our attorneys to, I think there's already laws that require reserve studies and things, and we can maybe outline that.
Okay.
Say, hey, this yeah. part exists already, you know.
And
I think we could
view more effectively.
Yeah. yeah. We could work with you.
And that's the problem at the state level, too, is they require the studies, but they don't require you to fund the studies.
Yeah.
So many states do, but Virginia currently does not. They just tell you have to do the study. What you do with it at that point.
It's your point that
it's up to the board.
There's also nothing that says you have to spend this money on roads.
Yeah.
So they can go beef up the entry feature and,
yeah.
you know.
There's a lot of interest in this. So I don't know if it's something where we might work with, you know, Derek and Angel try to draft something and then we send it to everybody and we talk about it. It's like, what are you thinking? You're listening to this. I mean, sort of a two-track thing where we work to fix it, but in the interim we also get a.
I think speed is the key here. I think so.
September is not fast enough.
Yeah. This is a big problem.
Okay.
As long as nobody objects, I think we can work with you and
okay. to capture all these sentiments
yeah.
that we're sent. Okay.
So just to make sure no one has an objection to getting this letter out kind of in between meetings.
Just one question. In the event, does anyone know where the first quick fix is at what stage? Because I mean, everyone's kind of been advertising that that's closed off and that a second list is being accumulated. And that's being gathered right now. So do you want me to speak to that?
So I was at ZOC at the last meeting, and so usually during ZOC they give an update, staff does, about where certain ZOAMs are. So my understanding is that the ROYA for the first ZOAM cleanup, which I think is the one you're talking about, the quick fix one, is supposed to be coming in September of 2025 with text going to ZOC in October. That was the last update. Now, can that change? Yes, but that was the last update that was
required. Which September meeting?
There's only one in September.
But the ROYA,
they did not specify, okay. But my guess it would be the second.
So, but even if it's the second one, time is still of the essence in terms of any opportunity to change anything, right? Because you got to work backwards from that court date. Is it like in terms of like issuing the staff report and having any opportunity to make any, you know what I mean? Like that's.
I would suggest that we obviously follow up with the staff to make them aware of this particular issue and to see if it's included. I will just tell you that they did their DPZ work plan. There's not a lot of room for adding things other than things that are currently occurring. So we need to have that conversation with them about where it's appropriate.
But we can still do the correspondence because we said.
I think that's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
You talk to them like if you were recording a plat right now, concrete's like Zed doesn't know what to do. Like, how do you record the plat? Like, this is a huge issue.
My suggestion is you make sure there's an account that says 10-year reserve fund and put a few dollars in it. And with the cover letter that says additional funds will be deposited by the HOA, I've complied.
I think maybe meeting a dead horse here, and I also understand that there may be sensitivity over answering this question, but I think, like, you know, to Rick's point earlier, like, understanding what the real problem was that prompted this being in the zoning ordinance to begin with may be really helpful in terms of trying to...
Listen to all the meetings. Honestly, where we kind of have landed is this was in the previous zoning ordinance, similar language, not 10-year reserve fund, but similar language about ensuring maintenance. And the CTP has language about floating a perpetual bond. And that's not going to work. So this is like the best. I mean, we could have had that in the zoning ordinance. So it went from that and worked into this. You know what I mean? So it's just a lot. I don't think it was. I don't think Zeb and I have any evidence that it was somebody went to a board member and it was this subdivision and they were broke. But he couldn't find it on a tape, right, where it became. Well, yeah. So I think we can keep asking that question.
No.
I'm not sure we'll ever get the answer to that question because we have a CTP that says deal with this. And a zoning ordinance that tried to interpret the CTP.
That's wild that that's in there.
We'll look at that in more detail, but I just didn't want you to think it came out of like thin air. Like there was always something in here, but what you would see in the zoning ordinance is more what you would expect, which says like, Zeb, help me out here, but I can pull it up, but I think it was like plat note that said that HOA, like private roads are privately maintained.
Yeah, there's multiple places where it says that.
Right, detailed out all the maintenance responsibilities and then. And of course, we have bonds for construction. And, you know, for me, it was really when they add the specificity of the 10-year value to it that's what changed it into something that we had to tackle a little differently.
Think about how commonsensical it is to post a bond for the road and then post another cash escrow for it as well. Yeah.
I think there's an interpretation of what that 10 years means too.
Yeah.
Intending to cover 10 years doesn't necessarily mean it has to be fully funded day one. You have a pot big enough to hold that money as it comes in.
Yeah. I think we need to get them working on it. It's like someone like that doesn't have any direction, right? Like what to do and how to interpret that, you know.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you Angela, I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks, everybody.
The language in the comp plan associated with it, that will be helpful to regards to this memo we're going to send, if there's other ways to meet the intent.
It's in the comp plan. I imagine it wouldn't come up for rezoning.
I think we're not going to solve the issue right now. I just want to, I think we've got a few people that are willing to work with Warren, kind of come up with a draft. And our goal would be to get it out as soon as possible, and certainly before our next meeting. Are you ready to move on to slide five?
It's getting a little tricky, the drafts. I have two more drafts that have yellow and green. It's getting very colorful, but we're trying to show you what we did since the last meeting. And we didn't do a ton of things, but we did address two items that had come up. One is relatively minor. I went too fast, I didn't tell you over. 5400 floodplain, section C. Basically, this was a floodplain team comment that there was some duplicative language in here. We were saying floodplain studies and alterations for major floodplain twice, like this gray text. So what this actually says now is, additionally, when a floodplain study or floodplain alteration affects the major floodplain, such information. Now, the applicant shall submit such information to FEMA once authorized by the county. So it streamlined it, cleaned it up a little bit. It was just a little bit too wordy. So this is just like editing. And then the big thing that we left off with the last time was in this discussion about the floodplain study type one. And we had some suggestions from Phil. He had submitted some information, and the staff, the floodplain team again, had some suggestions, and it was asked that we kind of bullet this out like it was before. So where this kind of landed was the green and C is just all deleted. Okay. And so this starts with a floodplain study type one may be submitted to a floodplain study type two only for the specific circumstances listed below. In the subsection one, you see major and minor floodplain as the category because it applies to both. You redelineate the floodplain based on more accurate topographic data. So that's the first scenario. And the second only applies to minor floodplain, and it is to update hydrology, for example, rainfall data of the existing model, FEMA conducted study, or previously approved floodplain study or alteration. I think those are the only two scenarios that are listed. So, hoping to clarify this issue, but taking comments.
That seems fairly straightforward. And just the understanding of the first bullet would be no modeling changes. That's what we talked about last time, right? That's just like in between sections, there's a little bit of a discrepancy. It's captured and cleaned up.
Yeah. Right now we capture it in site plans and stuff, but this would formalize that process, some new documentation of the
pre-dimension. Sure. Seems.
That's lower point. Is that requiring a little more submission for the major if it's redelineated? Mm-hmm. For redelineation, would that be a little more?
Yes, but it's a fee exempt.
It would be after. I mean,
what were you doing before for redeliminations?
We were just doing them in like site plans. There wasn't any kind of formal capture of it.
So the changes. We submit a type one floodplain study, and then also submit a LOMAR.
That's technically how it should be now. So this is just the process. We don't do it currently, but we should be, so that the maps reflect what's actually out there.
okay with this language? Right.
With the dumb question I have for you, when you combine your two, let's say in order to demonstrate your 5 vertical feet away or 40 horizontal feet away, you do a redelineation just to demonstrate to you guys we're far enough away. Or we don't need to do an efficient type one study. We can just show it in the plant to show you that we are that offset away. I don't think we've talked about what that, if there's a redelineation, I would imagine we would need that in a formal application.
Is it the reason why you do that study so you don't have to do it?
So you wouldn't have to do the full type two, they showed, because it's less like you would just be submitting the turbo data and as GIS we do. You're looking at it, so yeah.
Are you talking about the separation?
Yeah, that's what Megan was speaking about was
maybe the hopefully it's not correct. We need to have the correct data. So if you're basing your 5 vertical feet off of what's on WebLogis and WebLogis isn't delineated correctly, you need to have it delineated correctly. Let you base your data.
No matter what, then he's doing something every time water like 10. Unless the floodplain is acceptable where it's at, you're still 5 feet wet. You don't have any.
Tell you what's acceptable. I guess in the 5 feet, 40 feet, like a buffer where
well, so you're accepting with the county mapping, you're saying 5 feet away from that.
You know,
the county mapping's pretty good on the eastern half. It's the western half that's older that didn't get redelineated. And
yeah.
The last, when the county did a little county exercise, right?
Yeah, I mean, most of the western is from, like, the actual data is from the 70s, and it was just kind of flopped on the choke, so it's not artfully fitted.
Yeah.
I don't want to jump, but we do type one, or we do flip and studies. We set it up for a flip and operation this time. So my question is, it's not listing adding additional cross sections for a specific type of alteration, like a type one alteration. Or you have like an approximate model, and we've previously just been like updating with the flow or just putting in, there's always like a minor update to it. Are those type one alteration studies that were pretty just, we just use the approximate model as our existing condition without adding additional cross sections? Is that now going to trigger us to have a floodplain study in addition to that alteration?
Do you not currently need to study now that kind of thing?
So we use the approximate model, and then we just add a culvert to that and submit it as a
You mean like a type one alteration for a dry plain?
Right.
So if it's in major floodplain, so we've this has been evolving. If it's in major floodplain at this point, any project, whether it's dry or not, in major floodplain is going to be a type two alteration. And if we need a study with that, it would be a study.
Right.
But if it's a not major, if it's not major, if it's minor, so you're saying we need a type two study if it's minor floodplain for like a culvert.
Yeah, because the last revision had talked about adding additional cross sections to help simplify the process when you get to the floodplain alteration, and that was under the type one category. But if we're removing it all together and saying adding any cross sections for minor floodplain with a driveway crossing now needs to be a floodplain study type two in order to do the floodplain alteration, I'm just trying to understand the process if that's the direction we're going in.
My understanding is that adding cross sections requires a review of hydraulics, and if there's a review of the hydraulics, then it's a the level of effort required for it is type 2. Like, we need that information. They can't just be a type 1. So that was the discussion we had as a team, is that anything that required, I think it says, it's anything that's not just updating the hydrology is type 2.
Can that be done with the operation, or do they have to do a study, a new study?
Yeah. So we have, it has to be done. Right now, we only have 2 application types. So it has to be done as a study, application type, and alteration. You are establishing effective conditions, that's one application. If you are proposing conditions, that's another application. We do not have a combination application. Right, and I think previously we were submitting type 1 alterations, adding the culvert in, because it's supposed to, like, because you can use 8x8 for that. You don't need to actually have, you don't need to have an existing anything. You could just provide a 8x8 calculation and say, okay, I don't have a rise. So the question is, if you decide to use type rise, just plop in your culvert for your proposed condition. And then you just show what the headwater is at the inlet, like H-Y-8 would, you'd be done and not need to go through adding cross-section and existing conditions because you're still within your site. And having a whole existing condition study. It's just to try to give a little, like, type 1 alterations and added ability to use the software to model the crossing. Because it's much more accurate than using H-Y-8. And H-Y-8 is an acceptable type 1 method for alterations. So you're looking for a method that can be done out, like, the five method. Right. This is for alterations.
For alterations, yes.
Meaning that is something we can look into and discuss, but I don't think that's currently how we're planning on processing it.
I would say I found a lot of, do I recall some culvert crossings using Hegras without having to create a separate floodplain study?
No, I understand that. We've actually run into quite a few issues recently with driveways and culverts and floodplains and accurate data and rises and things like that. So it has caused us to look more critically at how we are treating driveways and things like that. So I guess, like, the alternative is for a person to try to save costs, they would then just use H-Y-8. They would never update Hegras, and you get an added benefit if it's in Hegras. So just like that middle ground, like, not having to do a second application just because we're using a better software.
We put a pin in this until we get to the alteration section.
Right. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's kind of like,
yeah, reflects back.
Right.
And just trying to help, again, efficiency, and if this language in the type 1 study is okay, I don't think what you're talking about is going to change whether, when you can use it.
She's asking, yeah, if we can add the cross section back in. I think that's true. Oh. And or additional cross sections when required for floodplain alteration. And what she's saying is she doesn't like that deletion.
Well, I'm something I don't like. I'm addressing somehow. Like, the avenue, that language still allows an avenue to utilize an approximate model for a type 1 alteration study. Because I just want to clarify that that avenue can still be done with this language.
But the old language did not say you can add cross sections. It says when elevations and cross sections are available ready for study.
This last part, and or additional cross sections will require floodplain alteration comparisons. That last little piece. And or additional cross sections will require for floodplain alteration comparisons.
Right, that's where we are.
So we had that, the team discussed it. They determined that wasn't appropriate. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but, and then took it out. So we had it, we showed it, now we said no.
Right. And I'm trying to add a little bit more context, because the alternative is you just use H-Y-8 to not have to do a type 1 study. And then have the floodplain alteration type 1 done with, like, less accurate softwares. I mean, the summarize what I think I'm hearing your question is that the minor floodplain, you're asking just use the approximate model.
Right.
and that is what we currently allow.
Yes.
Then I think that would be okay.
And we've been adding cross-sections to those approximate models to demonstrate it in our alteration as a one application instead of having two separate applications. It's because, I mean, most of the driveway crossings are usually something of those natures, right? It's not a developer and there's a lot of people doing something along those lines. So the second application for a full plane study, because we used a better software to model the impacts to show that there's not a rise or there is a rise on your property only, just seems like counterintuitive. Better data would, I want to encourage using the better data. But if you have an opportunity to do a type one alteration with HECRAS, it should have to force you to always do a floodplain study type one or type two.
That doesn't get added here. That text would be addressed in the floodplain alteration, not right here where we are right now. The floodplains, like we, it's not like we add to number two additional cross sections when required for floodplain alteration comparisons.
That's too simple, right?
Because I'm thinking if we just add that to number two, which is about minor.
No, okay, not here. Wrong place. Okay.
That's my
answer. Okay, got it. So we'll.
We're going to hold that language for.
We get a little further.
Yep.
Okay, so this is better. We've made some progress here. A great text. All right, so I'm going to, now we're moving forward to fresh territories. We have not been through this part yet, so we're just rolling forward. We just adding base flood elevation and the slowing place out in the D. Keep going to stop. Have anything added until we get to development and flood planes. Here we have the addition of the no rise, no impact certification. A minor change because of all variations, BD4 is listed in waivers. And just changing FOD major floodplain to major floodplain. So it's a change throughout. That's just introductory text. Then you get into the meat of the matter, which is the no rise, no impact certification. And it starts here. And this is the intro text for it. So when you're having no impact on the boundaries or the base flood elevation, then you're eligible for this.
HR and I already have a question. So I'll leave more people over to you before I ask it. Okay. So no rise, no impact certification specifically says the development that will have no impact on the boundaries. Previously, we had storm drainage outfall channels and excavation exteriors, which have in the past impacted the boundaries and have been okay to use under the declaration or no impact. So I guess the question is, we have storm drain outfalls, we have excavation activities. If that tweaks the boundary a little bit because it's like ineffective, but it still tweaks it, we can't use the no rise, no impact certification anymore. We have to go submit a LOMAR.
I don't want to make a statement, but you shouldn't have been using it anything.
Well, specifically it says here, storm drain outfalls and excavation.
Right, but if it's having an impact, that's the fun.
No impact? Yeah, we used to do declarations of no impact for those. Historically,
and it would just be a paragraph on the CPAP for site plan.
No, I'm familiar with what the declaration of no impact is, but it, as my interpretation of that would be no impact, so no change to the boundary, no change to the PMP.
Even if it got lowered.
Yeah, no impact.
Yeah, I mean excavation material would lower it, but historically, this is how we've been getting the that aspect, because under the new language, when you delete out A, B, C, and D, two of those things were previously allowed to do. Because, I mean, you're talking about like the fringe, right? It's not really changing the BFEs. It may be making a little bit of an effect flow right at the outfall, but it's like we know it's not going to be causing a rise.
So it's not an interpretive of no adverse impact. It's.
So every time we have a storm outfall, which typically does most of the time we outfall to a floodplain over a channel, like especially since we have to get to a defined channel to outfall, it's always good to be within a floodplain of some sort. The common thing we do. And my understanding historically was those were put in there so that when we're doing CPAPs and site plans, it's a seamless process because you're going to always have an outfall at a floodplain of some sort. Like that's, you don't have a man-made condition you're discharging to. It's a natural condition. You're it's usually at the lower end of the watershed. You're discharging to either a wetland or a floodplain.
So if you have a channel and it doesn't impact the floodplain, if you're not changing anything with the floodplain, you can still do this. But if you think this is written, so you
right. Like under stormwater management, right, we do 1% rule. 1% sure. is usually at floodplain.
Right.
And that is a common tool used throughout the county. And previously we could outfall to the floodplain without having to submit an alteration study. We could just outfall to it and just say declaration of no impact.
Even though you were impacting
floodplain. It says excavation activities, D. That was a permitted thing.
Yeah, but that is only in association with that it will have no impact on the boundaries of the floodplain. So those four items are, I'm saying these are the four items with specific types of development that are listed, but you still had to meet those criteria. It's not an exception.
Can I ask a question? Is this a county requirement or is it a FEMA?
I mean, the county, how about this? The county is saying that, like, it is within our authority to say certain activities are permitted without having to do open operation. But the understanding is that we are, by signing those letters, you're saying that there is no change to the boundary of the BFE, and that is why we are allowing it without you having to do an alteration or whatever.
So, like, if you have an outfall chain, it's the only thing going through there, obviously, pulls the floodplain back based on the contours of that outfall chain. So, like, is the way to resolve that is you build a culvert that keeps that exact elevation at that one point? So you're saying you're not actually moving the line? I mean, I think there's some reasonable judgment that maybe.
I mean, I guess you all are signing and sealing the statement. So if you guys are in agreement with, like, if you're comfortable with what you're signing and sealing as part of that statement, then I would say that's up to you. But what this means is that you are not creating any impact on with the activities that you're proposing. So if by signing and sealing, you're comfortable vouching that there's no impact, I think that's up to you. I think, I don't know what the exact language is, but I mean, that's what I would defer to. That's something that engineers sign and seal. And if that's a comfort level that they have, we don't request any kind of documentation.
I think the interpretation and what I mean, this is just a narrative in the plan to comply with the FSM. It wasn't a no rise, no impact certification. You'd stamp it separately. But historically, you put a narrative in the plan and you'd say, you know, this is allowed because it's a clearing activity or it's a excavation activity or it's a storm drain outfall channel. And then because it would say it was either B, C, or D. I didn't deal with A often, so I'm not going to speak to that. But if it fell under B, C, or D, you were good. Because those things inherently do not cause any rise, and it's an ineffective flow operation. You pull back a channel a little bit to get your inserts better, to tie out better, to change the slope of a channel, entering into another channel. Those things, you're talking about like pennies on the thousands of an impact. Like, not even quantifiable. So it is like a
So the language says the narrative will provide certification. Proposed development within the floodplain will not impact offsite property, will have no impact on the boundaries of the floodplain, configuration of the active channel, or the base flood elevation. You all submit those narratives to us. When we do the review, we are assuming, like our assumption on the review, is not that you are slightly changing the boundary to a tenth of a degree. Our understanding is that you are not impacting at all. If whatever you sign and seal, whatever you put on that narrative and you stamp, that is to your discretion. We are not verifying that. So if you are comfortable signing and sealing because you, your opinion is no impact, that is to you. But when we read and interpret these, we are assuming that there is no change to any numbers, no change to the base level.
Can we kind of speak maybe a higher level here? Like if any plan is near a full plane, it's spilling jail down. Now what do we now have to do? You better remove it 1 inch. You have to submit a full plane alteration to the county. Another step in the process that what we're all talking about here is like really just an extra administrative step that just extra. It actually provides no value in my opinion unless it's like a significant change. So like, I understand your concern. I totally understand that. But I guess the question is, what's the solution here where we can?
So I will tell you, we would have to kind of go back and talk about it because this is, what you guys are telling me is something I have never considered. It has never occurred to me that you guys are slightly changing the floodplain and signing these circles.
Well, we're not redelineating it.
But like, yeah, but the work you are doing is having some impact on the floodplain, however insubstantial. So like,
that's what we start that is no significant.
Yeah, I mean, it's not changing,
but that's what I'm saying. That's totally fine. That's just not what I have been.
Yeah.
When
we're lowering the floodplain.
Yeah.
Obviously, the concern of raising the floodplain before excavating a big area, but potentially lowering it, but now that's considered an impact.
And that is fine. That's totally fine. I'm letting you guys know that as floodplain administrator, my interpretation of this has been strict and to the line. If that is not what is happening, if you guys are not signing and dealing these things to that interpretation, it just means that my team needs to go and figure out how to solve the
problem. All right. So rephrase in a different way. Lower applications that FEMA receives, do they often receive a low mark for someone just putting an outfall pipe to the floodplain that just slightly moves it by like a couple feet, just to be able to get the invert of that pipe with enough outlet protection to the main stem of the channel?
I have no idea because I would have never required you guys to submit it because you're saying you have no impact.
I'm just saying,
all the examples.
Freedom's
gonna speak to your
question. I can answer that question. FEMA they don't have digital problems, right? They have D-films, but those D-films, they're not published to the public. So public's only looking at physical. Physical map has a scale, 500 scale, 1000 scale, 2000 scale. If you're saying you changed your boundary delineation feet, 5 feet, and that's not captured on that map, you must not worry about it. It's a line, right? A line's width is 50 feet.
Yeah.
So FEMA's not going to worry about it. We are talking about GIS, zooming in, seeing 1 feet, 2 feet, then that's something that we need to discuss.
Yeah, and so I guess the way that when we strike out B, C, and D from the FSM, it doesn't give us that avenue to still do that. Because
it does.
Well, the concern is that it's still there. Staff's interpretation of none is absolute.
That's the devil's in that. You said the word adverse impact, and then you said the word significant impact.
Right.
And she said the word no impact. I think the devil said that word. You know, that sounds like they need to do some research, maybe.
Sounds to me like the way that you all were interpreting it. Difference from the way we were interpreting it,
right.
Which hasn't been addressed until this point. Right. So we need to take a look at that.
And previous staff interpreted it that way. I mean, that was maybe so it could be changing. I mean, we have new public administrator.
Yeah,
we have changed. So
I would argue that it's not new. I've been here for 7 years and I've been interpreting that for 7 years.
It's just what they're saying. I remember from 20 years ago.
Yes,
when you put an outfall in, it was allowed. Yeah.
And you didn't have to do an alteration or study. I don't know if Todd can speak to it, but I remember that being.
So this is not this. That's what this is saying, is that you can do that without doing an alteration or a study. Like that, all, that interpretation has not changed. The interpretation is to what degree we need it.
Yeah, but the new language has kind of has stricken out the ability to use storm drain clearing activities and excavation from a qualified no adverse impact narrative.
Because not adverse, no impact. So this is the thing. I'm trying to clarify. You're concerned that we struck out this language.
Not me.
So something that you involved in doing. Struck out this. So we struck out this language because my interpretation of no impact, taking this language out, didn't make a difference because you can still have no impact with the no rise, no impact certification. It was just submitting a certification instead of submitting the narrative. So if we have so if we're going to do adverse, we can leave that in and update it to adverse. But my group has not talked about that at all. When we made the change, our understanding was there was no impact happening. What I'm hearing is you're interpreting that as no adverse impact happening. And so if we need to look at it and add this back as no adverse impact, that's fine. So I hear what the concern is about taking that language out. To clarify, when we took it out, my understanding was that it wasn't going to be an issue because
you would still allow those activities.
Those activities.
The assumption that there was absolutely no impact.
Right. We would allow those activities because you would just submit the certificate. It would actually be increasing what you could do. No rise.
So if we went through an alteration in the study and showed that it lowered the floodplain by 2 inches or something very small, and then we get that approved by the county, and then we submit that as a low mark to FEMA, are they going to laugh at us?
They're going to take anything you submit.
I mean, it's going to overwhelm them.
I've seen Lomars updating the bridge having no change to the floodplain. Right? Just because the bridge is expected. No change to the floodplain. It's absolutely those heights, so it's not out.
I think the whole purpose of this statement is that the engineer making a judgment call that I don't need to do anything further because this is not materially affecting anything.
Yeah.
And I think sounds like it. I just need to discuss that too.
Yeah.
We hear you. Yeah. We hear what you're saying. I think we just have a difference in the way that we have been interpreting it, but we need to take that information back and talk about it and work on that next time.
So potentially you would be adding back the version no impact?
It would no longer be no impact.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. That version no adverse impact. Okay. I just want to factor it in like a note.
Then you would have to define what is considered adverse.
I got it.
That's the other thing. Right. So, and then we always talk about the ambiguity issue. So then.
Right, yeah.
So I'm just throwing out that this is not an easy
thing. Well, you already have no that you're talking about.
Here. I think that's what they're ceiling to, though, and I'm ceiling. Well, this is a significant change.
Let's make it match. Let's talk about it, and we can move on to the next section.
Just to touch on the ceiling point for a second, I think previously you were putting a narrative that on a plan ceiling,
right?
And when you're sealing the plan, you're saying all things, and now it's like you're putting. I don't see any functional difference between whether it's a narrative on the thing you're putting your seal on versus it's a certification you're putting seal on. So when you're sealing.
Certification still on the plan.
Yeah, there's two different things because the certification is an extra form in addition to the narrative. So you still have to provide both. We weren't providing that extra paper from FEMA that has that no impact statement and sealing that and putting in the plan. It was just the
narrative. This certification is something that has to go from FEMA?
It's a form from FEMA that you fill out in addition to the narrative.
It's just it's a form that FEMA has given to localities as an example that they can use. We would probably have some version of it.
Right, and they've accepted that statement for excavation activities, clearing activities, storm drains. I just want to be careful with when we strike it out, since previously we had a list we could just default to, and I'm going to get in trouble for this, but when we do anything, any engineering thing, we have to look at what's permitted in the zoning ordinance, so I have to read that in order to create my narrative. So when I read the zoning ordinance and I compare it to this, the way that the language has been written, when it talks about floodplain development, I just want to be cautious that the new writing isn't going to conflict with us still being able to do outfalls, clearing activities, excavation activities, and isn't going to force us to now have to submit a LOMAR application for those things. Because it's also written in there that, and it's written in a way where it could be interpreted that way, and it can also be written, it's also written in a way where it could also be interpreted the way we're discussing it. So in terms of interpretation goes, I want to understand what that is now before we do our next application, and then all of a sudden we miss the boat on that conversation.
And we hear you. I understand what you're saying. We're going to take it back.
Fine. Okay. Is there a way to go back and add examples and qualifications to give people? We like talked about in the past, like in the big committee meeting, I was asking about like accessory uses, and previously there was a lot of vagueness as to like, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people getting zoning violations, and it is a regular thing now that we are submitting these no impact, no certifications, and like, there's still vagueness as to, like, where it really fits in. Like, is this allowed? And we usually point to the FSM, where it says, okay, similar in nature to this, we're not having an impact, we can do this. And one of the things I had asked for was, like, creating, like, a list of things that we could qualify as, okay, we know that this isn't going to be an issue, like, if it's in the fringe, or, like, we talked about a swing set in the backyard and the definition of if a swing set is considered an accessory use or it's going to be considered as an active rec use. So like if there is a way to clarify that either here or if there's a way to itemize that, I didn't know.
That more of a zoning interpretation? I mean,
well, we previously listed storm sewer activities, excavation activities, and I was just thinking we still have that list and just maybe add a little bit more to it.
Well, what if we go the other way, didn't have a list at all, and you're able to do whatever the zoning order
permits. So yeah, so what Kevin is pointing out there is that when the original language for 5.441 or now will be six, no, yeah, five, now will be six something. The language was only allowing that declaration of no impact for the four items that are listed, period.
Right.
The way that this is now written is that that is allowable, right, for any of the allowed uses, not just those four items. So we don't need to create a list of everything. It's allowed for as long as you're not in there, there's no impact. A good example of this is trees in the floodplain.
Right.
So when they're, you know, they have to do an engineering analysis, right? And they're showing that there's no rise and there's no impact to the BFE. So then they basically have an engineer do a this no rise, no impact certification, and that's what we take, and they don't have to do a full-blown alteration in the study. Right.
Okay.
So it is applying to all the uses, not just the four that are listed there.
All right. So it wouldn't serve to add a list here because you're saying it's already listed in the ordinance. When I'm just connecting the dots, I see some holes in vagueness as to like specifically the accessory uses for residential and like gardens, like. With gardens, it was a tough one, like the raised beds, and we took that interpretation, and that was still okay to do, to have raised garden beds in the floodplain. I'm assuming that's still okay.
The zoning interpretation. That's not something we can address at the FSM.
We had a list. I didn't know if it would be helpful to add to that list.
So, I mean, we don't enforce residential, like if you put a residential swing set, we're not going to go around and tell you you have to move it, but we don't permit it either. Like it's not a permitted use, residential activities. So
if you have a home and your backyard is floodplain, you're saying you can't put a swing set in your backyard?
it's technically not in the zoning ordinance. I'm not going to come get you for it.
Yeah, if your neighbor complained that you put a swing set in there, then we would have to go out on a zoning ordinance complaint and look at it to see if it's a violation, and then we would look at the ordinance. Maggie would say, it's accessory to the residential use, it's not allowed, and then we'd have to deal from it there. Do we actively go out and say, you have a swing set back there and it's not allowed? No. That's not how our things work. So I know you're trying to like meet the letter, and I'm good, but we're not going to do that level of looking unless someone were to complain, and then you look at it. Unless there's proactive enforcement, and that's an all another discussion.
So we're kind of digressing because this is a permitted use discussion for the zoning ordinance. Right. And so
we
can answer those questions, but what we're trying to do is get through that design.
Right.
Well,
so Megan, what I would say to you is that my thing for Zoc is that I had said that if there's something that comes up with
right.
zoning here, that I would report it. So if you have particular uses that you are concerned about, then you need to give them to Laura, and then Laura can give them to me, and we will bring it up during the Zoc meeting.
Okay. Am I allowed to just also have an offline conversation with you?
Like chat 5 is this close to make it quicker?
Yeah. Okay.
So what I heard is the team is going to take another look at this.
Correct.
No rise, no impact. Come back, talk about it again.
Correct.
Well, we're going to look at the declaration.
Declaration.
The declaration. But like, if we need to add that back. But I think our intent is to keep the no rise, no impact separate from that.
So we should review this text.
Correct.
Because that's no bearing. If she's going to put the other thing back, it's going to just reinstate the, it'll be like something like declaration of no adverse impact. That's what I was asked.
Yeah. The language adjustment to say.
Didn't say no adverse. I think they understand
it. Yes, we get it. Let us take a look at it.
Read them back. Read them as a question.
I have a question for the question. So when you say no impact, no rise certification, then you're signing off on it. Are you guys looking at the BFE? Are you guys looking at the delineation at all? Or are you not doing any of that? Just looking at FSM, ABCs, MET?
No, we're looking at both.
You're going to do both, right?
You're applying engineering judgment to the proposed activity. And whatever data you have available, and analyze, you know, hydrology, hydraulics, and trying to render an opinion without having to do a complicated model. And if we can do that, we sign it. I think the ones I've signed, I said no significant. Maybe nobody picked up on that. So, because I don't think anybody can sign an absolute statement. We're dealing with water and rainfall that it's not an accurate science to begin with. So, I mean, to say this is an absolute, you know, zero tolerance, I think we're fooling ourselves.
Well, I think too, like when we were submitting those things to FEMA, the template was more like no rise certification. So those aren't going to FEMA.
No.
Okay. Just to clarify, they're just forms for us.
One, ones through Loudoun County are other jurisdictions, right? We sometimes have to submit everything to them.
I think that's more of a no rise certification, and it's not so much a you've just moved this boundary, right? It's like this person did a bunch of work, they violated it. We are now providing a no-rise certification because it meets similar nature here, and we're good. And I guess the thing I was a little concerned with when we're saying we can't move the boundary at all, that part kind of conflicts with, like, what FEMA has been allowing in other situations. And I just wanted to make sure that we still could, whether it's an interpretation or, like, something that we can put written for 5, 10, 20 years from now, that it is continuing to be interpreted that way, we could still have no adverse impact because it's no rise and it's a nominal effect to the fringe to be able to outfall storm sewer.
I'm going to say you won't get an answer to that today. Let them evaluate. We really have to cut the discussion off at some point, right? I think the message has really been delivered. Let's see how staff comes back with some alternative.
If they're going to look at this, then we'll come back at the next meeting with
What I'm hearing you say is we want to finalize the no rise, no impact, because that's still going to be a separate thing.
We'll do it at the next meeting. Next meeting. We're moving on.
Okay. Nice. All right, floodplain alterations. If you're not eligible for a no rise, no impact, you're doing a floodplain alteration. FOD is removed. And then we have some language here, Maggie, that's removed, but it may be moved down. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's just moved into the type one alteration.
So I'm going to skip the deleted text, right? And I'm going to move right into type one floodplain alteration. And this is listing the situations for which you get a type one. Oh, no, it's just clarifying. Well, no, yeah, type one. Otherwise, you have to do a type two. Sorry about that.
So it says increase in base flood. Change in base flood.
Pretty far. Right here, due to increase. You're saying not boundary. You're saying it's just about the CFD. It's about the elevation, not the boundary.
It's about a rise. It's always about a rise.
It's about a rise, yeah.
Saying it shouldn't sit in.
They're just reinforcing the previous.
Okay.
So that's a, such as without limitation of potential damage due to increase. So that's like an example. One example is the way that I read that, that that's not the only time, but that is an example.
It's an emphasis. I mean, if you just said such as, I think that leaves the door open if you're emphasizing that. Anyway.
Well, so I think I heard a question about boundary. Should this also include anything about floodplain boundary? If not, it's fine, but I think that will certainly be.
That was fine.
It just said, or change in boundary after. Still doesn't really change. It doesn't really change the intent language.
Well, it's type, we're talking about type two. So you can filter about and change the type one. So.
Well, this is a pretty severe thing. Potential damage to neighboring property due to increased base flood. This isn't just saying I changed my elevation.
Yeah, this is saying you can go to type two, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Because she receives a type one and she thinks there could be more significant impacts, and she's like, whoa, time. Okay, so not a lot of this changed, right? I mean, you added roads, right? Road crossings were always there. There's private roads.
Access easements. I guess it was there, but it's not access. So that blue paragraph at the top is kind of a retooling of the Strike out paragraph at the bottom.
Above, before.
So at the bottom, if you scroll down.
Oh, at the bottom. Yep. Oh, thank you. Okay, proposed designs.
Yeah, I mean, it's just retweeted. But I believe the intent is, or the intent was for the center.
Can I just pause for a minute? The potential damage, does that leave the door open that someone could argue that there's an increase in the elevation or adjoining property, but it's not damaging? Or is the increase itself considered damage? I just don't want us to get into your questions like that. Basically, got a rise, but it's absolutely no damage.
Well, except if it's a floodplain, you might not have the damage when you complain, but you have potential damage you couldn't anticipate.
What I'm saying is if there's increased base flood, period, you need to type. Are we leaving a, I'm sorry, type two? Yeah.
This is flood. It
always said damage.
It said, but it didn't say exactly due to elevations. It said to ensure that there's no potential damage. It didn't say due to elevations. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they consider damage if you increase the water. It's like damaging because they're now you can't do certain things on the property.
Okay.
I agree. Like,
is it necessary to say that this helps?
Kind of like the original text because it gave examples. It said due to backwater or increased channel velocity. Like it told you. What we meant. Damage as in this or this.
Yeah, so looking at the paragraph, we could, if you go back up top to Laura, we could just take out the such as without limitation potential damage. I mean, the point is that the floodplain administrator have the option if more engineering or detailed engineering is necessary to evaluate to make that request. That's the point of it.
Right.
So we could take out the such as without limit, that whole part of it, but it still leaves the ability for the floodplain administrator to ask for.
Would we take out increased BOV?
Yes.
Always then.
That's what I'm saying. That's okay. What my recommendation is.
Okay.
I'm even at the committee too.
For where in the section it talks about using HVAC, is that a different section for these studies? For me, this is the information. It's in chapter 8. Was that earlier?
Talking about modeling methods for alterations?
Right, yeah.
I think that would be in type 2. We're not there yet.
No, I mean, or type 1, where it was listed that we can use 8.8 for that.
Sand modeling?
The full chapter 5.
I don't see it. I mean, if it's in there, I'm not saying where it says which models.
Floodplain study type 2 says you need to use HEFRAs.
Right.
Or other methods.
So that kind of implies that type 2 is when it triggers the HEFRAs.
Okay. Well, we have specified for type 1.
Do not.
So I guess this is where that loophole was happening, and then the language still allows us to do that same mechanism using a higher running software to model a driver crossing, because type 1 alterations don't typically provide equipment studies, just provide an HVA calculation with whatever the elevations are showing that the headwater ties out to the floodplain elevations, and then it's on our property and we're done, the miners. And is that still okay?
I don't think we had discussed changing that at all.
Okay. So then that if that's still the intention, I think then I don't have to circle back to that anymore.
Which one?
Just come up.
Oh, the other vice versa.
Just
turn the little way. Oh, we're here. I'm sorry. I apologize. Okay, there's those
changes. Clarify. Yes. Yeah.
Subsection 3, get a plan. But it was already doing that. That last paragraph read and clear so revamped it to the internal.
These were all under option 2, right?
This is type 1.
Type 1.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Then we have number 2 and number 3. These are new type 1 criteria.
Yeah. Oh, dumb question. What is valley? Is that
overbanks in that section onto 1A. Is there a definition of that?
Channel and valley of the flood.
You guys are just saying channel and the overbanks?
Just say no changes to the floodplain.
Or just, I mean, if it is the overbanks, like, I just, it's not a consistent terminology used amongst the mammals and all the other aspects. So I have been asked, what is considered the valley? And I want to assume it's the overbanks.
I'm assuming it's the call wing.
The top of it?
The call wing, the bottom of the channel.
Oh, okay.
That's my own.
Yeah, that is better. Just been.
Are we making a note in valley or forget? You had a suggested edit?
I just want to know what it was so I understood it. If other people understood it, then I'm just catching up.
That's a good question.
Ethan, tell me one more time what you said valley was. I'm not going to just put it here.
Top leg. T-H-K-L-W-E.
All right. Thank you. Valley of the channel.
Jeopardy question.
It's going to go into minutes. Okay. All right. So we were back to a plan shall be provided. Plan shall be provided that illustrates location and cross section.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's
nothing. Yeah. Okay.
We're only 2 and 3.
I have a question on number 2. So the first sentence there makes it feel like a really big bin of stuff. Is the intent for this to be like pretty narrow modifications? Like, for instance, the first part of that first sentence, if the criteria is really just minor changes in the floodplain without an increase in BFE, I mean, you in theory could build a bridge that spans the floodplain with no gradient changes and no rise, and they would meet that criteria, right? So is that the intent that something like that could be a type 1 floodplain alteration?
Well, if it completely spans the floodplain, is it even a change to the boundary?
No. So I'm just trying to make sure I'm capturing, from my standpoint, like, that could be a fairly complicated thing, but if we're saying that that's type 1, that's fine. I'm just trying to capture the type of stuff which could go in this type 1 bit. For my idea.
Sure. I think it's less about the complexity of the project and more about the complexity of the work happening in.
Okay.
That makes sense. Like, if your bridge is a complicated bridge, but you have maybe a couple, I don't know, some work in the floodplain that's not affecting anything,
right,
then I think, I mean, as always, we recommend you talk about it beforehand, but
sure.
I mean, yeah, I guess that would be my interpretation of it.
So it could still have a lot of modeling changes per se, with and still be a type 1?
Okay, that's interesting. So the intent of type 1, so I guess a good way of thinking about it is we have 2 B types. One is $500 and one is $5,000. So we are trying to thread a needle of what we can incorporate into a type 1 that is not as much work pushed down. So with that in mind, I think, how could we phrase this?
Okay. Yeah, and I'm thinking maybe a good example would be broad run, no bridge.
Okay.
Proposed conditions, lots of part time. That spans the floodplain. There's no BFE increase. There's a whole bunch of piers in there, but it doesn't lead to a rise. So is that a type 1 or a type 2?
I would say 2 because
yeah.
I
put it. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Span it with no piers. And you
right, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just
a different line of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would say is that's a type two. So I'm just trying to like look at what we have here.
To give an example,
there's building a bridge.
No, that's fine. I'm just,
I think one of the changes when we go from an overlay district to floodplain is the overlay district before went infinitely into space as well, right? So now it's just floodplain. It's the boundary on the ground. So if you're going all the way across it, it's not the same.
It's not impacting it.
It's not impacting. It's not overlay district.
So there's no development. But I don't think that's how FEMA interprets that. Like, I think if you were showing a bridge spanning major floodplain, I think there would still have to be some kind of analysis that goes into that.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be, like, much of an analysis. It would just be, if there was a BFE, you would show the cross-sections and the construction drawings to prove that you're not touching.
You're always going to have piles, right? This is a hypothetical.
I designed the sites on the East Coast constant to avoid this problem.
This is where I just want to clarify. When I was first reading this, that section there is where I thought that the storm outfalls was trying to allude to having to fall under now. So I just, when you're looking at the other thing, like for the no rise or no impact, adverse impact, my initial impression was that it sounded like clearing, excavation, and storm outfalls would start falling under this category, which is what I was concerned with. So, I mean, that's an interesting point. It could, but based on our interpretation, that wasn't the intent of this. So. Right. However, we clarify that, it would help.
I mean, yeah, we can try and figure out some language to put in there that makes a little bit more clear on what we're talking about. I think, again, it's kind of going back to anything that involves us, like reviewing the cross-section data that comes in, like any hydraulic rankings. So, like, if you have a bridge, here's an app, if you need to,
that's worse, right?
So, it's just that's kind of what we're looking at. We're gauging, like, okay, how much of this do we need to, like, open and review? And, like, once we get into the mechanics, it's like.
You just have to be able to say that's not minor.
Right.
I don't think we're going to be able to define minor in the FSN. These things are so location and project specific that us trying to. It's a nice matrix analysis of that is
right. It's just this specifically
understood nexus to the
flow.
But so, what do you have to do to prove that there's like, I guess that's maybe a question, like, what kind of effort is involved in proving or demonstrating that there is no increase to the VFE? Like, if you're putting in some like minor fill to put in like a trail.
Right,
that's a little, but I'm saying, so going back to like kind of a bridge question, right? Like, what level of detail do you have to get into in order to demonstrate to us that there is no increase? And if that means putting, you know, your cross sections and all that, then.
So then can we fix that to say minor fill grading in the ineffective flow areas? So that way, when we're cutting and grading ineffective flow areas in the other FSM section, it's clearly separated between the two, that cutting is
no faster. They need to reevaluate the section.
So to Phyllis' point, I think we can resolve.
I like the idea of moving this last part up to the first sentence. So saying without any increase to the base flood elevation, such as, but not limited to minor grade, you know, it's right there in the first sentence. It's not. Read the first sentence, think I can put a bridge in and go two sentences later and see the examples. I think that could help to fill. Like just moving this up. I'll show you what I'm thinking. I just think it could really help.
This is just an example of one of those sections where we're trying to add something to help industry but also, you know, we're working within certain confines. So whatever suggestions we'll clarify or make sure that we're not, you know, creating an unintended, not loophole, but like not trying to get this huge project to come in and then be like, it's simple.
Yeah.
So. Right. So previously, how were we operating under this situation when you've got minor fill?
That would have been a type two.
It was a type two. So it's saving fee costs because it's now qualified under a type one. That is super helpful. The only caveat was this also sounds like it could be storm outflow. So
I just moved it up.
It's almost like what you're trying to get at is you don't want changes to be required in one. Right? So, I mean, can we just say something closer to that? Like, probably maybe overly simplistic, but I feel like that's what you're getting at.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, free them, Todd, do you have any? Yeah, I mean, that's what I would. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
So how do you know? I mean, the boundary. I mean, what's the tolerance?
We don't know that early.
If you have to update a section, you have to add a hydraulic structure, you have to change the effective flow. I mean, there's a zillion different things you could do, but
like if you've got a 600-foot floodplain and you're just filling in 1 foot of it, that's not going to require you updating.
Yeah.
The whole floodplain, like that's usually a narrative that was previously being put under the no impact certification and upstate thing that we didn't have at the time. It wasn't the narrative, it was
that still gives you a lot of real room for interpretation. But also, if, for instance, if somebody doesn't update the model when they should have, you can just point to that and say, like, oh, we should have updated the model right here, but you can't do this. Rather than listing off 10 things and forgetting 2 things that you forgot.
Yeah, I think what we run into is, I mean, and to the point that it's kind of in there, we get people filling in ineffective flow areas, not a lot, but like putting in like
a trail.
We've had trails are a big one. Like people are just have to do a little bit of grading, but it's right on the boundary, right on the boundary line. And so no matter what you do, you're filling right at the boundary. So it's going to have some kind of change. So that's what, or like, again, ineffective flow areas. Like, that's what we kind of were thinking of. Like, people will come in and we'll be like, well, you have to do a type two for that. Like, and, but it's, that side trail isn't requiring an updated model, right? Yeah, I mean, that's, we had a trail in an ineffective flow area that they submitted the model for. Okay.
I think the situation that I have come up with is where there's been a model that's done. They're putting in a small amount of fill for a trail, and that fill wouldn't change anything in modeling. The boundary of the floodplain is going to change a little bit, but no modeling is changing. So what is the process to allow something like that? Right now, there's not a good process. This was to try to come up with something for that. So
yeah, I should have captured because you said you didn't need a model to change, right?
Usually, typically, they're pointing to, hey, it's a backwater condition. We can pull up the model and look at that and verify it. But there's no typically new modeling. That's the,
yeah.
I get what you're saying, Phil, but this is like county attorney's office usually challenges us to come up with examples. And honestly, what if I just argue there's no change to the model needed and I'm wrong?
And I just handed to you
and say, there, I didn't have to do any changes. I mean, I feel like that could cause more back and forth debate than filing action.
Sure.
I mean, we have to justify not providing a model whenever we submit things every time. I mean, to the point of the no impact statement, there is a certain amount of engineering judgment that we accept. I mean, we might look at it and go, I don't think so. But like, there is a certain level of engineering judgment that we're going to be like, yeah, okay. We're specifically quoting science. And like, we're being like, if you were to think logically, understanding Mayne's equations. Reducing this end value isn't going to impact it. We say all that. Yeah. We don't need to do a model for that. We can just understand the scientific theory and be done.
So I was going back to Phil's point of this example to say where there are no changes in the model or where no changes in the model are required instead of the example.
Yeah.
is what was being suggested.
I believe that's what you were suggesting.
Yeah. And Laura, if you just want to put a comment, yeah, like highlight the comment.
Okay, tell me.
And we'll text it kind of. We'll come back to it next time.
Consider
so point number three, what is that?
So if you have a focal plane alteration and you're like, I have to change my deck elevation, I have to change like my line or something, like then you can, we don't have a revision application. So that's our revision application. Change it from a 7x6 to a 7x7. This is a fee thing more than anything else. So right now, if you needed to make, like if your site plan resulted in a change and you needed to update your floodplain alteration that's already been approved, instead of paying $5,000, you would pay
$5,000. But it can be a model change too.
Because you've already, in theory, what's happened is you've already done the work. And so you're just trying to edit your work to show the changes. Now, if you've completely redesigned your site and it's a new thing, that's probably going to be a new application.
Are you going to need bulk revisions?
Hmm?
Are you going to need bulk revisions of what we changed?
I would just,
I don't think we have gotten that far yet in what
the I would say minor revisions should previously improvement. Does that make sense? Because that's what I'm hearing. Yeah. You don't want to have to reevaluate massive changes to the model, but you're willing to. If it was a previous type two, if you do a little tweak, you're going to be able to.
Yeah. And we've had that before where people have been like, we had to do some restructuring of what's in the floodplain or the grading or something, yeah, and they've had to submit, a full fee.
Right.
Like we would still need all the plans and everything that you submitted before, but it's just a fee change.
I'm waiting for Jason to say, such as, you add minor, that's subjective, just like in two where we had minor change of building boundary, such as.
There is a level of subjectiveness.
It looks like administration works.
Well, yeah. But what you were really saying was that if the revisions got to a certain point, that it would require a different type of app. It would just require like a whole new revision.
Yeah, I mean, if there's like, if you're coming, so we had a project once that they designed their site, they submitted the floodplain alteration, and then for some reason they did it before the legislative application was approved. So because of their ledging, they had changed the whole site plan. So we were like, well, you're going to need to send us a new.
But I think it doesn't, I don't think it means it qualified.
I mean, how does it work?
It's just like, you're just trying to capture a way to give people an opportunity to revise something with a much lower fee. And you're always going to make that judgment call of, no, I'm sorry, this requires a whole new application, right? Like,
I mean, how does it work with, like, if you revise a site plan or construction
site plan? You can't even use spam anymore. Threshold is like so low for a spam.
But so, yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying is, like, if you look at a spam's requirement, like, does it list out specifically what scenarios spam is?
No more than 5,000 square feet, no more than 10,000 square feet of disturbance. It's like extremely minor matters.
I'm okay with leaving it subjective because if this is like a new thing, we're trying to figure out how it works, and we can kind of see how industry responds, and then you can say minor revisions to a previously approved floodplain alteration application, subject to administration.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to put subject to the,
makes it worse. A legal standpoint, I'm waiting for Jason to come in because what's going to happen is he's going to edit this later. I'm trying to like avoid the comeback.
We have one section where we can admit all floodplain study subjects to the administrators.
That's true.
Approval. So
there is that. Yeah, that is true. We do have that.
And this gives you a way to say, ask Maggie, but there may be an avenue.
Okay. We're into type two. We want
to start. I think we're good, Laura.
Oh, you're.
I mean, we don't have any. That's all for chapter five.
Yeah, that's the end of chapter five.
The rest is chapter.
Hey, Laura, this is Jason. Hey, sorry. The revision I have is you have to still delete that applicable projects may include text.
Oh, thank you.
And then Maggie, is Crossings of the Floodplain? I feel like in the Zoam, the draft Zoam, didn't we change that to just Floodplain Crossings or Crossings or something? Or is the U still Crossings of the... I thought we shortened that for some reason.
I thought we did too. No, it still said Crossings of the Floodplain or Crossing.
Okay. And then I guess ineffective flow area and backwater area, those are, I guess, industry terms of art that you understand. Nice. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Science. Not
participant.
You got the general just. Yeah. Thanks, Jason. I wanted to add one thing. So we've got just 1 minute. So we have the annual report that's going to administration posterity. Seemed like a good time to just express my appreciation to all of you for all the work you've done over the last year, including staff and all the input. I think it's a good group. Sometimes you get bogged down and sometimes you go too fast, but in the end, I think you produce some really important things, and I really want to thank you all for participating.
Thank you, Captain.
Now we're adjourned.